Now, this southern oscillation, the El Nino and the other cousin, has been connected by some people to global warming. In other words, the more global warming increases, the more we get this extreme. Do you go along with that idea?
The thing I'm pretty sure about is that if by global warming, the human-induced factors, we change the background state on which these variations develop, we'll change the nature of the variation. So we might see in the future different frequency of occurrence of El Nino, a different amplitude of the effect. The whole system of ocean and atmosphere is so interconnected that it's hard to conceive that we could change the background state without changing the nature of these variations.
Is that panning out, that idea that there is a connection with what you're seeing now?
I would be getting into speculating at that point, but what I'm sure of is that the Indian Ocean has heated up very dramatically in the last 30 years. The warming rate is more than twice as fast in the last 30 years than it was for 70 years of the century. The other thing I'm sure of is that this kind of large-scale variation in the Indian Ocean is more intense since 1990. It's been much more intense than it was in the previous years, at least the years since I've been collecting data. So we see changes in the nature of the event. It would be very hard at this point to say it's definitely a greenhouse effect. Things are changing.
And with more hard data from the ocean to our west, we'll be able to make those predictions more confidently. Gary Myers heads the Indian Ocean team in CSIRO Hobart. So is it safe at all to predict what the world will be like in the year 2100? Chris Thomas has dared and looked particularly at the atmosphere, plants and animals. He's Professor of Conservation Biology at the University of York.
Well, according to most estimates, it'll be at a global level between 1.4 degrees and 5.8 degrees Celsius warmer, though the absolute range of possibilities is a bit wider than that.
And what other sort of effects can you predict, do you think?
Well, one of the big effects, which isn't talked about nearly as much as it should be, is the fact that carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere itself will be higher than probably for about 24 million years. And that's a long time, and since carbon dioxide is what plants use to grow for their photosynthesis, and it affects the acidity of the ocean surface, and that affects the ability of microorganisms in the water to make little sort of calcium skeletons. So we can expect huge changes in biological communities on both land and in the seas as a result of this carbon dioxide concentration increase, let alone the climate change that goes along with it.
Dramatically different sort of environment. Are plants and animals already moving in response?
Yes, we have very little information on how species are responding to carbon dioxide changes in terms of distribution responses, though some people now think that increasing invasion of savannas in Africa by woody plants of trees and scrub may be a direct response to carbon dioxide. And then in terms of temperature, particularly in the northern hemisphere, which is where most of the data come from, we're seeing the vast majority of species, about 80% of the species, moving north and moving uphill. And accompanying that has been the retreat of species at their southern and low elevation boundaries.
What about the other 20%? Why are they not moving?
Well, of course, some species may not be directly affected by the climate at all. On the other hand, if you think of all of the other things we're throwing at the landscape, changes in agricultural practice, population density in various parts of the world, it would be amazing if species were not also responding to that. And so, for example, a species that ought to move northwards, like, let's say, the Searle bunting in Britain, in fact, agricultural practices have changed so much that its distribution has collapsed down to its core of its former distribution, and it's now more or less restricted to Devon, where conservation agencies are trying to protect it and engineer its recovery.
Looking worldwide, or even Europe-wide, of the 80%, which are the startling ones that you've actually looked at yourself?
I just concentrated on butterflies. And for the butterfly work, what we're finding is all of the species which are relatively strong flying and can use a diversity of habitats, they're able to spread and take advantage of new habitats as the climate becomes suitable for them. The specialists which require a whole series of complex things like particular plants for the caterpillars to eat and the grass on your meadows to be a particular height or whatever it is. These are having much more difficulty because they actually can't move northwards across agricultural prairies of the Midlands. Now, three of the four northern species of British butterfly, we've got very good evidence now that two of them are dying out in the south and have moved northwards by the equivalent of about 70 to 80 kilometres in the last about 20 years. And one of the other two, the mountain ringlet, has actually died out at low elevations and is now found about 150 metres higher than it used to occur just a couple of decades ago.
Well, of course, Terry Root has done the same sort of thing both in America and in Australia, looking at the ways in which many of these species have adapted, have moved, have changed dramatically where and how they live. So it is a global thing, isn't it?
Yes, it's a truly global phenomenon, from coral reefs bleaching when the water gets too hot, to plants spreading on the Antarctic Peninsula, through to a whole range of animals and plants moving throughout the Northern Hemisphere, tropical amphibians and birds moving uphill in sort of their mountain refuges. Things are just changing all over the place, and it's this signature of many changes by many species in all parts of the world. And then when we look in Britain, we see that it's not just the well-known things like butterflies and birds that are responding. A whole series of different groups of beetles and grasshoppers and dragonflies, even woodlice, we're finding further north than they used to. So it's across all types of group, and it's across all parts of the world that we're seeing these sorts of change.
One could either say, of course, that isn't it good, they're adapting, they're shifting, they're doing what they need to do, or you could say that 2100 is a tough place to do conservation. Which do you choose?
Well, to some extent it's a bit of both, because it depends where you are in the world and what your concerns are. But at a global level, we've got very, very large numbers of species that are restricted to quite small regions. For example, there's lots of mammals and birds and amphibians and reptiles which are restricted to the mountains in Queensland. And as the climate warms, if it warms by 3.5 degrees there, then we're expecting about half of those species effectively to get pushed up at the top of the mountains and die out completely. And this sort of thing looks like it's going to be repeated in mountain ranges particularly, right round the world. There'll be other species which take advantage of the changes, that's certainly true. But from the point of view of the number of species on the whole planet, that's clearly going in a downward direction.
And who would have thought in September the temperatures here were 82 yesterday, that's 28 degrees C, and today it's baking as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've had July which has been just exceptionally hot, and you just have to look at the facts and figures to realise that climate change isn't just something for our grandchildren to worry about. It's happening now. 2005 was the hottest year on record. Something like 8 out of the 10 hottest years on record have been in the last decade. I mean, we are now moving into the types of environment that haven't been seen for thousands of years. And given the projections of climate change into the future, it's potentially we're going to have a climate and certainly carbon dioxide concentrations that haven't been seen for millions of years. And we know that quite a lot of species are going to have problems in these new environments, and that there are going to be a huge number of unexpected changes, but it's really hard to predict what they will be.
But that figure again, 80% of species are now already affected by climate change. By 2100, who knows?